Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us on the show today. Joe Giglio in just a few moments on the Philly situation. But first, we'll stick with baseball. Our play-by-play call of the day. The Nationals go to the National League Championship Series.
Kelly's one-strike pitch. Swinging a fly ball, center field deep. Bellinger going back to the warning track, to the wall. It's a grand slam. Howie Kendrick has done it. They're going crazy in the Nationals dugout. Howie Kendrick with a grand slam here in the 10th inning of Game 5. The Nationals 7, the Dodgers 3. Do you believe it?
Yeah, I do. I watched it. All right, so the Nationals win it. And look, Rendon hit the big home run. Soto hit a big home run. Kendrick hit a big home run. You can replay all the what you think are the mistakes Dave Roberts made, but you know what? Sometimes you got to give a guy credit for making a play. But that's not how things are covered these days. All right. So with that, we now bring in Joe Giglio, Sports Radio 94 WIP, NJ.com. Joe, how you been?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for being with us. Let's start with this, Joey. He obviously twisted in the wind for a period of time. Many thought that the longer it went, the more many might stay. So how did you view today's action?
So I wasn't surprised. I was part of that viewpoint. When the season ended, it felt like just the way it was being reported on, the way it was being talked about, and kind of the way the tone of Gabe Kapler's last press conference, the final day of the season, it felt like 99-1 that he was gone. And then as the days have gone on here, and it took so long, and the Phillies kept some of his coaches and other teams fired all their managers, I moved to more 60-40, 55-45. But I felt, if I were a wager on it, I would have thought since the season ended that he would not be their manager moving forward. It's just kind of a weird roundabout way the Phillies made their decision here.
All right, so Joe, here's the next part. This is very simplistic, but on opening day 2018, when he took Aaron Nola out after, 60-something pitches, 68 pitches, I felt like that before he got to the seventh inning of his managerial tenure with Philadelphia, he lost the fan base. I know that's simplistic, but is there some reality to that?
There's complete reality. I was doing our final out, our post-game show here on WIP after that game. I was the first person on after Gabe Kapler's first game as manager. And, yes, I agree with you. He never won over this fan base. And this is a very Philadelphia thing, let's just be honest. You know, the fans here, and it's a good thing. I mean, I'm part of it. I'm a fan here. We have a lot of say, and we have a lot of kind of our influence the owners and teams listen to because they want the teams to reflect the city. And Gabe Kapler, I think through no fault of his own, I think he was Gabe Kapler throughout. It was the guy they hired, the guy that they interviewed and gave him the job. He was true to himself. He was true to the way he wanted to manage. And just the kind of juxtaposition, and I find it almost poetic in the irony that the last managerial move of his that was debated hotly here, and it was in a lot of the stories today that were kind of the obituary on his tenure. End of the season, they're about a week and a half to go. The Phillies are, I mean, they need to win 9 out of the last 10 or whatever it was to have a chance. It was over anyway, but they lost the game in Atlanta. They were trying to sweep them. It was a Thursday afternoon, and Gabe Kapler not only allowed Aaron Nola to stay in the game through the 6th, 7th inning, but with first base open, he allowed him to pitch to Freddie Freeman instead of intentionally walking him. So I think it's almost poetic that his tenure started with not trusting Nola against Freddie Freeman, and it ended with he trusted Nola against Freddie Freeman. Neither worked. That was kind of the story for Gabe Kapler here in Philadelphia.
Did he have the support in the clubhouse?
I think he did. Now, I don't know what was said behind closed doors, and I don't know what some of these players, the stars, said to owner John Middleton, because that was, I guess, part of this whole process was gauging the players. outwardly, they seem to like playing for him. That part of that may have been that he let it be a very player-friendly clubhouse. I don't think he had many rules. I don't think he was a disciplinarian. So did they love him? I don't know. Did they like him? I think they did. And outside of maybe one or two players over the last 2 years, I can't remember anyone speaking anything but highly of him. So if I had to say, I would say, yeah, they liked Gabe Kapler.
You and I both know that when moves are made, 80% of the time, to be fair, they go the opposite of what they had. So let's take the Yankees are a good example. Joe Girardi was not the biggest guy in analytics. Aaron Boone convinced them he was. So they made the move with him. If you have a disciplinarian, you go with somebody who's looser. You have somebody who's looser, you go with a disciplinarian. So what's your thought process now on what the Phillies might do? Do they steer maybe in a different direction instead of heavy, heavy analytics, or do they stick with it?
So I think this is the most fascinating part, and I agree with you. This is the way it typically goes. And let's just use the Yankee example, because I think that's a fun and kind of juxtaposition to what's going on here in Philadelphia. So, yes, that Girardi was kind of he pushed back a little bit. He wasn't totally on board with some of the things that the front office wanted to do, and they went and got a guy that fit the front office. And I think that is the issue the Phillies are now going to have. They kept Matt Klentak. They kept the general manager. And I think in today's baseball, the GM and the manager have to be on the same page. There has to be a symbiotic relationship. Klentak and Kapler were. Now, they didn't get results, and that's why this is not going to work. But if they go the other way, now, the disciplinary part, maybe they can find that, and that could be the opposite of Kapler. But really, if they go the other way in terms of the way he wants to manage a game and throughout a game, it's not going to jive with what Klentak wants. So if they do this, you're going to have a GM and a manager who are not on the same page. And ultimately, I don't think that is the best for any team.
Okay, so let's throw out an experienced name that wouldn't be quite the same as Gabe Kapler. You hear the rumblings that Buck Showalter could be considered. Would that be realistic?
I think it is. If I had to wager, I think it's the most realistic. Mostly because I think Joe Girardi probably has other offers. Joe Maddon probably has the Angels offer. So I think Buck Showalter makes a lot of sense. And it might be the best of all the worlds when you try to check all the boxes. More of a disciplinarian, more experience. And he has worked in Baltimore with basically everyone in this Phillies front office. So maybe it's not as seamless as it was with Klentak Kapler. But at least there's a working relationship there with the front office currently in Philadelphia, Andy McPhail, Matt Klentak, Ned Wright. They basically hired Buck Showalter down in Baltimore. So there's something there that feels like if they're going for the most seamless transition, that one I think makes the most sense.
All right. Any other names that come to your mind that you would say that would make sense for this organization? Who else would fall into that category, Joe?
So I think a name to watch just because he has connections to Andy McPhail, who was the team president, is the team president here, was in Baltimore, was also in Chicago in the early 2000s. That'd be Dusty Baker. Now, Dusty Baker has been out for a couple years, always seems to be the manager that can win, but not win the big one, and he'd be a departure from the way the Phillies have tried to manage in-game. But I think that name is one to watch. And frankly, I don't think they'll go with another first-time manager because they want to win right now. I don't know if they want to go through the growing pains again like with Gabe. But if they did, Raul Ibanez, ex-Philly, and he's been working in front offices, and the Yankees were interested in him a couple years ago. He, at that time, said it wasn't for him, and he just retired. I think he wanted to be with his family. If Raul Ibanez is interested, I could see the Phillies at least giving him an interview. So I put his name in the mix, Dusty Baker, Buck Showalter, and probably Maddon and Girardi is kind of the pipe dream type of hopefuls if they could get an interview with those guys.
How interested have you been in what seems to be a recent trend of some teams hiring guys that don't have managerial experience? Aaron Boone didn't have any. Now, he also writes out a lineup card that has Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, and Gary Sanchez. And not all the time, obviously, but most of the time. How interested are you in the fact that that's been some of the trend in Major League Baseball?
Well, I think it speaks to the lessening of the power of the manager. I mean, the other thing about it is, if you go look at some of these guys that you're describing, their salaries compared to the Mike Socias, the Joe Maddons, it's peanuts. Yeah. Gabe Kapler was making less than $1 million a year. I think it tells you the power of the manager now compared to back in the day, and it's why the manager's really an extension of the front office. It's the front office person wearing a uniform. And I think all these teams are trying to find that perfect balance where they think like a GM. They think big picture, long term. They think about win probability. But they used to play the game so they can relate to the player. So I was on board with the Gabe Kapler hire from the start because I think that's the future. It's just about finding the right person, right message, and getting everyone to buy in. But I think we're going to get more of these kind of hires as we move forward.
Who made up the lineup every day, Gabe, or did he have help making it out?
So, I mean, Matt Klentak has been steadfast in saying that everything that happens in the game, before the game, decisions on playing time, it's all Gabe. But then Gabe also says that they speak every day and they go over stuff every day. So I'm sure Gabe had final say, but I don't think it was I think Matt Klentak had a lot of say on the big picture and how they were going to use these players.
Philly's made a lot of moves during the last offseason, and between you and me, Joe, there are very few of those moves I even remotely disagree with, but it also tells me they had much further to go than people realize. That's just my opinion. You may have a different opinion being much closer to it. But what do they need to do in this offseason to attempt to close a gap on a team in Atlanta that appears to really be flourishing despite what happened yesterday?
Yeah, you have Atlanta, and then Washington Nationals are not going to go anywhere. I mean, Steven Strasburg could opt out, and maybe that cuts off some of their star power, but they're in the NLCS. Juan Soto is 20 years old. Now, they might lose Rendon. That will hurt, but they have a lot there. So, yeah, so you have two teams in this division that are quite talented. Here's the way I look at it. If they really, truly want to compete next year with those teams, they need to revamp the starting rotation in a significant way, and that probably means spending a lot of money. It probably means getting creative with a trade and hoping the pitcher they bring in hits here and maybe he's better here than wherever he was before, and you kind of steal somebody. So that's the first thing. But to go to your point on last year and now we realize they still have so much further to go, I think the biggest mistake they've made, and part of it is happenstance and circumstance, and you strike when the iron's hot, especially when it comes to signing a guy like Bryce Harper. But I think when you look at their 40-man roster compared to everybody else, not just their five or six best players, but their 40-man, they just don't have the organizational depth. They don't have the prospects. They don't have young guys coming through that can contribute. I think the Phillies' rebuild was a year or two away from being good enough to go all in. They decided to go all in last offseason. They gave us the picture of, we're ready. But then as the year went on and you watch the guys that were playing and filling in, you're like, well, then they weren't ready. It just was obvious.
From the fans' point of view, how tough a season was it? Because it didn't even seem like the fans were enjoying the wins.
They weren't, and I wasn't. I mean, it was the strangest season in that they had one 7-game losing streak in June. That was their worst week of the season. They bounced back from that, and they played basically 500 after that. They never won more than 4 in a row. It was very tough to have strong emotions one way or the other. They never, outside of the one bad week, were so bad you're like, fire everyone, season's over. They were never good enough, though, that anyone truly started to latch on and believe. It was like every 2 days your emotions fluctuated from, yeah, they're not good enough, to, maybe. And the wild card race is there for them. It was, they were truly, in every way, and I think the numbers back it up, the way the season went, they were a 500 baseball team, which I think sometimes those teams in any sport are the most difficult to just kind of have a discussion about, because if you're bad, you're like, well, blow the whole thing up. If you're great, you're thinking big picture World Series. And if you're 500, well, you're 500.
And the bottom line is, if you're 500, you feel like, okay, we're this close to just, boom, taking off. And you never do. And that's where the frustration comes in.
Yes, and it happened time and again. And I think the other frustrating part was the Phillies had a lot of moments where they played really well against the best teams in baseball, and they had a lot of moments, like basically their season series against the Marlins, where they played bad against the worst teams. They had a stretch in August where they, I think it was a 3-game series here in Philadelphia and then two up in Boston at Fenway Park. Those series were separated by another series in between, but they swept them. They beat the Cubs 3 in a row. They went to Fenway, beat the defending champion Red Sox, both games in Fenway. And in between, I think they lost a series at home. It might have been to the Padres or the White Sox. And it was like, what are they doing? Like, why? And it was just, it was a frustrating team.
One final point. I always feel like one of the determining factors in an offseason is what a team does with its bullpen, because you and I both know that essentially you're trying to catch lightning in a bottle with two or three guys. Can they have a career year for us? I mean, that's all these champions that you look at them one after another caught lightning in a bottle with one or two guys in the bullpen who had the season of all seasons, and then after that they disappear into oblivion. How difficult is that for any organization to try and scout this thing out and roll the dice to get a couple of guys like that?
Very difficult, and I think the Phillies entered the year thinking they had that kind of bullpen. They were bullish on their bullpen to start the season. Yeah. They had a million injuries, basically wiped the whole thing out. But here's why I'll go back to organizational depth and a good farm system. Think of a team like the Yankees. Yes, you know, look, they will buy relievers. They will have an Aroldis Chapman who makes a lot of money. But most of their good relievers, Chad Green, Dylan Betances, who was hurt most this year, became one of those last decade or so. Those are failed starters, talented arms they had in their organization. They realize at some point, yeah, they're not very good starters. They put them in the bullpen, and they dominate. The Phillies can't even fill a rotation, let alone take extra starting pitchers and put them in the bullpen and try to see if their stuff plays up. So that's where you get lucky. That's where you find a reliever you didn't know you had. And unfortunately for the Phillies, they've been trying to still squeeze those guys into the rotation in what the reality is they're probably best suited to hopefully become what we're talking about.
Over the last 10 years, you're talking about Andrew Miller. First-round pick by the Tigers, ended up being a dynamic relief guy.
So. Yeah, and look, for the Phillies right now, Nick Pivetta. I mean, if we're looking at one guy, that maybe that is the where he could become, like what he could become, because we've seen it time and again. He's a failed starter. They love his stuff, and I think if he's ever going to figure it out in Major League Baseball, it might be exactly what we're kind of surmising here.
Joe, thanks so much. Appreciate you coming on with us on such short notice, and the insight was great.
Anytime, guys. Appreciate it.
Joe Giglio joining us from 94 WIP in Philadelphia and NJ.com. More in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, your home for the Philadelphia Phillies.
Scared of visiting your local car dealer
or even peeking at their website?
Don't be afraid to shop at Sundry Motors Kia.
There's no scary monsters or witchcraft at SMC. They're a family-owned dealership that's been in the car business for over 100 years. Right now, hurry in for 0% financing for up to 75 months on select 2019 Kia models. Plus, save as much as $5,000 off on a 2019 Kia Sorento S, $3,400 off on a 2019 Kia Forte LXS, and save an incredible $9,600 off on a 2019 Kia Stinger GT1.
The only thing scary about SMC
is the traffic jam these deals will create on Routes 11 and 15.
Car buying fears aside and get to Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip in Hummel's Wharf.
Offer available to qualified buyers through KMF. Offers expire 10/31/19. Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to Kia.com.
When you have a big story break, it's always great when you get a hold of somebody and on short notice they say, yeah, I'll come on, I'll do that. It's better for the audience, and the fact that Joe Giglio took the time to do that, we greatly appreciate it more than you know, because I think it gave the audience a great perspective, and of course we are and continue to be your home for the Philadelphia Phillies, and we'll track and see how the managerial decision goes here. We'll find that out. I mentioned the name Buck Showalter right away, and he didn't exactly shy away from that notion. Thought that was interesting. He certainly would give you the idea of the older, steadier hand that's been around the block. Now, what does that translate to? We'll see. You know, part of it is, who do you have? Talent means everything.
And just down the road from Philly and Baltimore, I mean, Buck Showalter was just so beloved in Baltimore. Well, okay, which Phillies manager was absolutely beloved in Philadelphia barely a decade ago? Oh, yeah. Charlie Manuel. I think a lot of Phillies fans would love to have another beloved guy running the team.
We'll find out. He's not, I mean, it's not like Buck has a relationship with anybody in Philadelphia. You become beloved by winning. That's what I've been, you know, that's what I've been trying to impart to the Friday night play-by-play guys. Is any, you know, no, I'm just kidding.
Or one in particular.
Well, I think everyone assumes now. I mean, yeah, tried
but, you,
to,
but you know what happens when you assume. You gotta watch out there.
Yes, I saw Tony Randall show that on The Odd Couple one night in court. Open lines, final half hour brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kierwitz 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And Chris in Shamokin has patiently waited. Hi, Chris. How are you? Thanks for joining us.
Hey, I'm great, Steve. Shamokin Dam, actually, but... I like to say I live in the best smoking by a dam site.
There you go.
I just had a couple things. First on Pennsylvania baseball. In Clint Hurdle, it was time for a change. I'm curious on which way the Pirates are going to go for a manager, and I think that puts Neil Huntington on a hot spot for next season.
I agree with you. I think this is a critical choice for Neil Huntington to get somebody in there that's going to improve the club, in his opinion, or at least give them a different feel there, because I think Hurdle actually is a good manager. But they're going to have success this year. If they don't have success this year with the new manager and it stays the same, then I think you're right. Neil Huntington then has to look around and say, I wonder if they're going to get rid of me next.
I think the most important thing with the Pirates is get some coaches besides the manager that can teach their players the right way to play Major League Baseball.
Yeah, there. Well, you know what? Part of it, though, is the talent level. And I'll be honest with you. As somebody who has watched the Pirates at the minor league level for many, many years now, I have not really been completely enamored with some of them. And I don't think they quite have. I don't think they have quite the depth in the organization that some people perceive.
I totally agree. And another job opening, not discarding the Phillies, but Danville in their football program, maybe the suit can be the new head coach of the Ironmen.
Oh.
I mean, if it's a full-time job and it gets them out of the place, yeah.
The coach would like it.
Exactly.
Chris, what if he asked you to be on the staff?
Probably not, since I'm a Steelers diehard.
There you go. Okay.
Yes.
From the looks at the start, the Penguins are going to have a long season.
You know what? That's not a surprise, because we all looked at the Penguins and thought there was a possibility. And it's really hard to look at a Penguins team that has a Sidney Crosby and a Geno Malkin, although Malkin's hurt right now. It's hard to look at a Penguins team. Yeah, it looks like when you look at a Penguins team as Sidney Crosby, it's hard to say that they're going to have a long season, but they very well might.
Yep, they might turn into the Edmonton of the United States. A lot of talent that doesn't go anywhere.
Could be. We'll find out.
I'll see you at the military game in November.
Looking forward to it very much.
Hey, take care.
Thank you. It's great to have him when he shows up as well from Shamokin Dam. All right, let's now bring in... Well, go ahead. You have to introduce him. It's actually contractual now.
Yeah, that's true. But we're not going to wait till tomorrow. Number 78 in your Enfield High School football program. Well, not now, but back in the day. Number one in our hearts, and of course, Steve, yours as well. The pride and joy of Connecticut, the most interesting man up and down the entire Atlantic seaboard, your brother, Kevin Jones.
Hello.
Sorry, I hit the wrong button. Sorry. Chris called up on the line normally that Kevin calls up. I hit the wrong button. So.
All my credits here. Oh my gosh.
Plus, I ran on the mark this morning, so we're. on fumes.
That was a good call. That was interesting.
Yeah, Chris is great.
Chris is always has a lot of really good thoughts.
Yeah, knows what he's talking about. So. How's that analytical thing going for you?
Well, you know, I think let's just take my job, for example. Now, I obviously, you know, in my job, do we use analytics? Yeah.
Well,
but you only use it as a supplement.
It's like everything we do, the teams have gone too far. Did you hear the
yes.
Red Sox? They're blaming that they went too deep into analytics and got away from what won a World Series, that human beings play the game, not numbers in a computer.
Right.
I think analytics are good, but they've gone too far with it. Well, I'll shut up.
No, I think that analytics are a great supplement. I think if you're going to coach or manage based solely on analytics, that means to me you personally don't have a good feel for the game.
Yeah.
And I think the feel for a game means something. Now, if you coach an entire game just on feel, I don't think you're going to be successful either. I think you need to have a little bit of balance of both so you can... So I think it allows you to develop a better feel for situations.
Well, and they feel like in the Red Sox situation, I know in the Phillies situation it was the same thing today. John Henry is a big analytics guy. I mean,
right.
I think that's how he made his billions, you know, computers and whatever. And he believes strongly in it. And a lot of the Red Sox beat writers and everyone are saying they got away from just gut reactions and turned into numbers. The numbers say it's got to be this. The numbers say that we don't need a closer. The numbers, you know, and all of a sudden,
right.
they were
right.
screwed, you know.
And right.
So that's what the Boston people are talking about now, that they got away from the human end of playing baseball in 1 year. They went from the best team arguably ever to a mediocre average team because they relied on numbers and not on the basics of baseball. You know, a right. gut feeling that I'm going to bat this guy against this guy today because I know the numbers say it's not good, but I got a feeling, you know. I got
right.
away from that, and especially their pitching staff. Who's the kid from UConn? Barnes.
Matt Barnes.
Yeah, he said he got all messed up with it, all messed up. And
yeah,
he got away from what got him there, and he had a tough year because of it. So anyway,
yeah, you know, I just think
good
I think
answer.
There's a
you gave the right the answer I thought you'd give. That it's like everything we do. Too much cake is no good. You know, it's good, but too much of it's no good. You got to find a happy medium. And boy, who. What happened to Clayton Kershaw last night? Oh, my gosh. He's not a big-game pitcher.
No, he's not. And that's – I mean, last year when the Red Sox played the Dodgers in the World Series, he was going to be the game-one starter. And Sean remembers, and I said, I'm not really all that worried about it. I said, this is not his spot. I think sometimes you throw so many pitches, you only have so many in you. He doesn't have the velocity he had before. I mean, last year from the All-Star break on, he only threw one pitch over 92 miles an hour. That was a year ago. And I just think that there's some people that really thrive in that spot. And I remember years ago I was criticized by somebody when I said if I had a choice between Clayton Kershaw and John Lester to pitch the seventh game of the World Series, I'd pitch John Lester.
Absolutely.
And I got criticized because you're talking about Kershaw. I said, so what? I said, this guy's proven to me I hand in the ball when I need it. He gets it done.
Oh, ESPN was posting his numbers and playoff game. They were awful. You know, he's just not a big game pitcher.
And no.
Too bad. I didn't see the game. I fell asleep. How would you like to have bought a $3,000 ticket to the Atlanta game?
Oh my goodness! Yeah,
they're losing 10-0 in the first inning.
But
only
see, this
one home run in the game. It was all errors and kicking the ball around. And,
oh, I know.
Oh,
but
man.
See, I'm thrilled because Mike Schilt, the manager of the Cardinals, is a friend.
Yep.
Ollie Marmol, who is the bench coach for the Cardinals, is a friend. Tommy Edman played here in State College. Harrison Bader played here in State College, so I was happy because the guys I know did well, and I want them to do well because they're all terrific guys.
Hey, if Major League Baseball wants the perfect World Series, they'll have the Washington Nationals against the Tampa Bay Rays.
That'll draw them out.
Bucknell versus Temple would draw them out. They were playing on ESPN.
Oh my goodness.
I don't know. Yeah. Watch out for the Yankees. Boy, they're deep. You see, they're deep players that may not make the roster. They're excellent players. So the Yankees are deep. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Oh, no. And they also have the best bullpen. That's, to me, the key. They don't have to sit there and go and turn to starters to fill spots. Their bullpen's good enough.
And you're right, but the closer scares me. Man, he can...
Chapman.
He gets freaked out. He starts walking everyone. You're like, come on, man, just throw the ball over the plate.
Yeah, what happened to him on Monday night in the post game, and when they were celebrating, the champagne bottle broke on his hand or something. Was that his throwing hand that happened to?
Oh, I don't know.
That was earlier this week.
Listed on the injury report. Yeah. So.
He must be okay then.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, they're not like the Patriots where Brady's on the injury report every day.
I don't know. The Yankees are deep, but we'll see what happens tonight. I can't believe Tampa Bay came back on Houston. Houston's bats are dead. So.
Yeah.
What? And I don't know.
There's nothing like those 3 hour. There's nothing like those 3 hour and 53 minute 9 inning games. Keep running out another reliever. That's great. That's great.
Oh, my God. Well, how about the football game the other night? Was it Thursday night? No. Monday night football? Oh, my God. They kept going to commercial. I think they three plays took 20 minutes because they kept replaying it to see where to spot the ball. You know? It's like, gosh, man, you're killing the game. I got bored. Put a movie on.
Yeah. Oh, I stopped watching. That game was bad. It flat out was a bad game. You're like, I'm not watching any more of this. I'm not wasting my time.
Well, how about our picks this week? Washington, Miami. What a game.
Oh, jeez.
We'll save that for last.
That's the tiebreaker.
The Tua Bowl.
0-5. Washington's second worst in offense is second worst in defense, and they're only above Miami.
Something's got to give.
They're absolutely the two worst teams. So.
Who wants
all right,
more?
So let's pick them here.
All right. So our standings after 7 weeks, just a quick look at last week. I gained one on the King. I was 4-3, and the brothers Jones were 3-4. So after 7 weeks, Kevin is 29-14. Stefano, you are 26-17, and I'm 24-20. So that sets the table week eight. Not really close. I'm still five behind you. So just got to keep pecking away at it. So.
What are you, 24-20? That's good.
Yeah. No, that's not really.
You'll be fine. If I keep making dumb picks, you'll be right there. Here we go.
You're just giving me the old Jedi verbal mind trick there. So, all right, our Super 7 of games. First off, we'll lead off with this. This will be the big primetime game on Saturday night.
Chicolemy Holy Redeemer?
No, they're playing Friday.
No?
They're playing tomorrow.
No.
So.
I was kind of hoping we could pick that one since nobody knows anything about it. All right.
All right, we got Florida and LSU. That'll be the Saturday night showdown in the Bayou.
Here comes the shocking stat of the week. Whoever thought one would utter these words, LSU leads the nation in scoring. Whoever thought those words would be in the same sentence?
The quarterback is really good.
Yeah, he was at Ohio State. I'm leaving. Great. Well, he's gone there. He's been terrific. LSU, even though Florida has a terrific defense, LSU.
Yeah, I got LSU as well.
I have LSU. They're very well coached. Quarterback's playing Heisman-level football.
Yep.
High noon on Saturday, the Red River rivalry at the Texas State Fair, Longhorns and the Sooners.
Well, I'm a big Sam Ellinger guy. I really like him at quarterback, and he's got guts. Oklahoma has more talent. We'll go with talent at multiple positions. Oklahoma.
I also have Oklahoma.
I have Oklahoma. I think Jalen Hurts will win the Heisman Trophy. He is having an outstanding year. Okay. So we're all even so far.
Okay. Now we will go to Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia. The Temple Owls will host Memphis.
The Memphis defense is actually really, really good. And I know a lot of people are calling this as the upset special. I'm going to stick with the favorite. I'm going to go with Memphis.
I also have Memphis.
Yeah, darn. Yeah, I read up pretty good on it. Memphis, very good football team, but neither one of them have really played anyone, you know, that really tests them, although Temple beat UCF. So, all right, I'm going to rock the boat, and I'll cross off my Memphis, and I'll go with Temple.
Oh, look at you. Gutsy. All right.
Yeah, gutsy.
Upper management will be attending that game on Saturday, by the way.
And then you with the interim guy, I thought
kill
he had a game.
Me if Memphis wins this game, I'd be like, you idiot.
Because
I'm telling you, Sean, I'll let you right back at it.
This could be the tipping point, yes. So.
Yeah. Okay.
And we'll stick, we had Texas on earlier, but we'll stick with the Texas State here. A Texas Tech at Baylor. The Fighting Matt Rules.
Well, let's see. The father of the Texas Tech quarterback, I know. But I think he got hurt again, didn't he? Bowman.
Nice playing.
Matt Rule grew up here in State College.
Yeah.
And I know Matt.
Yeah.
So we'll go with the Fighting Bears at home. Baylor.
I also have Baylor.
Oh, man. I took Baylor, too. But should I flip it and...
That's up to you.
Because I watched Joanne and Chip. They're from Baylor.
Oh, yeah, they're from Waco, yeah.
Waco.
Yeah, the Chip and Joanna Gaines.
The Fixer Upper
Chip
show.
Chip and that, Joanna.
Yeah, Fixer Upper. That's great.
I'm trying to keep up with all the people that you know.
That's a great show.
Chip and Joanna. So.
Yeah.
Mangolia. I'll go with Baylor. I can't. The Texas Tech's not going to win this game.
No.
All right. On to the pros on Sunday.
Good games, though. They're all made you think, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. You're mixing it up, which is good. Texas Chiefs, Texans and the Chiefs on Sunday.
Boy, I'll tell you, the way Kansas City played the other night was not exactly inspiring.
A lot of injuries.
Yeah, and Deshaun Watson's playing great. So let's have a little fun here. I'll go with Billy. I'll go with Bill O'Brien. I'll take Houston with Deshaun Watson.
I think the Chiefs are just too good to lose two in a row, and this one's also an Arrowhead, so I'm going to take the Chiefs.
So it was the last one.
The Chiefs.
That's right.
Well, I took Houston.
And you took Houston, yes.
Yep. So Kansas City, Houston. Okay. Another interesting game.
Okay. So, Kev, you got Kansas City.
Yeah, I got KC.
Okay.
Hard to beat them at home.
Yeah. All right, NFC West matchup, the 49ers coming off that big blowout over the Cleveland Browns on Monday Night Football, which I watched zero of the game.
I watched the whole thing. Mm. Good football team.
And they're going to take on the Los Angeles Rams at the Coliseum.
I'll take the Rams.
Yep, I've got the Rams too.
I got San Francisco. And I'll tell you what, San Francisco is playing old school football.
Mm-hmm.
If they're, and I'm not sure if he's playing because he got hurt.
The fullback,
but
him.
Their fullback, he is a monster. And when he's in that game, there's not a team in the NFL that can stop their run. He is the best blocking fullback I've seen probably since, was it Moose Johnson? I mean, he just he finds the right guy, and he doesn't just block him. He annihilates him. And it's almost like here he comes, and they're getting out of the way so they won't get hit. But he got hurt. So I'm hoping he's playing. If he's playing, they just control the ball. And they're on like 13, 15-play drives and score. So I'm going to go with San Fran.
Yeah, I just wonder if they are actually, if they're truly back, the 49ers, you know, because they've been.
Yeah, with him in the game, they're a different team. When he got hurt, they could not run the ball. I mean, both running backs had like 150 yards each. They rotate the running backs. I mean, they ran all over Cleveland. It wasn't even. But when he got hurt, the running game kind of stopped. So that's how good this guy is. So. Anyway,
all right.
I'll take San Fran.
The game that we have been waiting for, the Tua Bowl, the Washington Redskins, now led by Bill Callahan, at your Miami Dolphins.
Let's see. I'm personal friends with Pat Flaherty, who was fired by Brian Flores during the middle of the preseason. So I'm still ticked off about that, and Pat and I have talked about it. So I'm going, and Roger loves the Redskins. So I know where my bread's buttered. I'm going with the Redskins. Unless Roger wants Tua.
I'm taking Miami. I just think there's just so much instability going on in Washington right now.
I'm going with analytics. I'm taking Washington.
Analytics. Yeah.
Bill Callahan and analytics. Yeah, that's in the same sense. Sure. All day, every day. Right.
Go Penn State.
Yep. Big game.
Safe trip.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Speaking of analytics, Cam Miller, Pro Football Focus on tomorrow's show. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15, and Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.